It's Alan Cobb, Donna Colby, and Bill Teeple. That's me. And this is Icon Art Radio, and we're broadcasting from Icon Gallery on the Square in Fairfield, Iowa. The other night, we had an odd Thursday, a topic that we discussed with the group, and it seemed to touch a core place with everyone. And we were discussing longing in the role of art. And it seemed to be that we were getting at something that sort of drives the entire evolution of mankind. It's a need for fulfillment. And that the artist's acts are I described it as a kind of a desperate attempt to create some state of union, to do something about this need to merge and to find a unified experience. What was your take on the evening?
Well, I think we went a lot of different directions because we talked about that kind of longing, you know, the longing for unity and all that. But there also are other levels of longing or other kinds of longing that we talked about, longing to connect with other people, longing to express when stuff builds up inside you and you just, it needs to come out in some form, longing to find missing pieces. That's sort of like longing to unite, but it's just a kind of specific phase of that where you, something, what's happening, what's missing in my work, in my life, and there's a longing to correct that. And then later on, I was thinking about, as an artist and as a growing person, there are actually phases of longing that we go through. And I was reflecting on my own life, that when I was young, the main thing that I longed for was insight into other people and how life worked. It was this immense curiosity about what people were like who were different from me, and what families were like who were different from my family. And it led me into a vast phase of exploration at that point, reading a lot of books in the library and about people who are different from me in other cultures, and trying to go visit all sorts of people in my neighborhood, including the woman who lived in what we called the haunted house. Real scary looking place, you know, sort of like in the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, the house that Boo Radley lived in had that aura. And this woman in my neighborhood was a similar kind of person. She was just a recluse who was kind of strange, but turned out to be a very interesting person. So anyway, that longing as a child was very rewarding because it led me to all these kinds of discoveries of life beyond my little scope. And then in adolescence, and I think this is pretty typical for a lot of people, the kind of longing that I felt and most people feel is to connect with your social group, and you just, you know, you want to do the right thing and you want to get along, become more intimate with other people. And then as you get older, I mean, for me, in my life, there was a longing to create more people, to become a mother. And as an artist, if a person doesn't want to become a mother, it may be a phase once you're out of school where you really have a deep need to create something new, to bring something into the world that's born of you and that expresses what you are, but somehow it takes on a life of its own. And then for me, then circling back as I became older, there was kind of a circling back into that same place where I was a child of deeper insight. And this time, unlike the phase of the child where everything was new, this time it was a desire for insight into what was underneath everything that I was kind of taking for granted. What are these layers that I'm not seeing? And so there was that kind of a quest in both my artwork and in living. And finally, in what I call my mature adulthood, the longing is now for kind of bringing everything together that I've gathered for much of my life, gathering impressions, gathering knowledge, ideas, everything, and doing something with that, expressing, having some really integrated expression that takes into consideration all of this other stuff that's been gained. And so all of this has to do with a propelling force that I could call longing that is essential. It's an essential source of energy for doing whatever I do in life, and I think this is true for everybody, whatever form their kind of longing takes.
So what do you suppose is the next stage of longing after that?
For me, you mean?
Well, we were only speculating, because you've been talking about your...
Yeah.
Well, there must be a sort of like... A longing to just sort of like let it all go, the relative world, and you have faith in a kind of merging with something greater than yourself, so that the ego, it seems like, is sort of driving all this stuff, and there must be a point at which it sort of gives way a little bit, and the longings are something greater than yourself.
See, and I think that, what you just said, I think that weaves in and out of all of this.
Yeah, I think so too.
Individual, the stuff of individuality and the longings of individuality. There is always a pull to that level, to surrender to nature.
Well, there's probably a pushing and pulling of those two things throughout.
Yeah.
Alan's sitting there. When he can get into this conversation or not.
I'm trying to think of something I can say that isn't so abstract that I have
any idea
how
terribly
to
abstract.
Say it. Well, the problem is I don't know how to say it because it's so abstract.
You can just say, oh, it's too abstract. I'd like to say, but I can't.
I was going to reveal the true nature of the whole conundrum, but... I'm afraid it's too abstract.
Oh, darn.
Is it a conundrum?
Well, wrapped in an enigma.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I saw Churchill yesterday afternoon, and I'm still wrapping my mysteries in enigmas. That was a wonderful production, I have to say. Mr. Edlin has done himself proud. But longing, I was just wondering if the longing to get past all of the superficiality of the ego is a longing of something other than the ego, or is it just another aspect of the ego having that longing? And because, you know, I don't know if the innermost self even longs for things. I think it just enjoys them.
Go ahead.
And so, you know, longing to get past the surface is nevertheless, an act of the surface.
Well, yeah, I think actually this thing we're naming longing. Mm-hmm. Is wound up with the ego.
Yeah, it's still ego.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just it's the ego's quest.
Yeah, the ego wants to find everything without having to lose anything. In particular, its notion of individuality, which is the main thing it has to lose to find everything.
I don't know. Don't you think though that there is a longing that's a kind of underlying force of life that's beyond the ego, that even propels the ego to long to go beyond itself. You know, there's some, it's like, I mean, longing might not be the right word, but it has that feeling to it, I think, not longing for fulfillment of me as an individual, but longing for the breaking of that bondage of little me.
Yeah, I guess we probably have to define what the ego is and all of these things like that. But there is a force that causes the creation to take place.
Yeah,
and
I just
as soon
don't
as we
feel
have multiplicity,
longing.
Then there's this like drive for it to play itself out.
Yeah, once you get into having created time and things like that. I feel like the underlying force of creativity or evolution or life, I suppose in some incredibly, you know, abstract sense, you could say it's, you know, based on lack of totality. But at the same time, I don't really feel that, to me, longing is like an emptiness, an awareness of an emptiness and its antidote. Whereas the thing underlying all of that below the level of ego, I don't think there's emptiness involved or incompleteness.
I guess I don't think of longing as meaning emptiness, as implying emptiness. Or I think, to me, longing is more of an awareness that I get incompleteness in the sense that there is something, not necessarily emptiness, but there's something more that can be known.
Yeah.
And there's a longing for that that's built into life, it seems like, for all of us to.
Oh, I think it is. I guess I'm just saying that I don't think that at the basis of it all, there's a need for more. I think at the basis of it all,
right,
it's all there.
I think you're right. Yeah, in that.
Because, I mean, isn't longing kind of intrinsically a form, however colorful, of dissatisfaction with the present, with what is?
I think.
Yeah, well that's what the quote that I couldn't find the other night, that Martha Graham has this wonderful quote about the artist is never satisfied. Mm-hmm. And it's a divine dissatisfaction, she described it as.
Yeah, in terms of, I mean, the whole topic of Odd Thursday was longing, the role of longing in art specifically, and we're now kind of relating it to all of life more. But in art, all of the greatest artists describe something that was like pulling them on and pulling them deeper and pulling them to expand their boundaries. And that's what, to me, longing is. It's that something inside, whether you experience it as an emotion or this divine dissatisfaction that Martha Graham described. It's something that, and it isn't, like you said, Alan, it isn't fulfillment. It isn't that basic level of life that is satisfied with what is in every moment. But it has its purpose.
Oh, sure.
In the play of life,
I think that there's a kind of that artists at a certain level of the thing, when they really are working with the kneading the clay of reality, there's a point at which you could sort of like transcend it and say, I don't need to do this anymore. But there's this sort of like going back in consciously into the drama of life, and all of the emotional needs of all of the souls, and you sort of like work it, and you sort of know better, but that's part of the joy of being an artist is like you know better than life.
That.
you're kind of have transcended the whole thing of all the drama of life. And then there's this sort of fun of, not even fun, there's sort of this like going back in to say, isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
But you have to sort of buy into the longing and the drama and all to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the expression part. You know, when we were talking about longing for expression, I mean, the whole question, the ultimate question of why did the Absolute manifest has to do with that play and expression, range of expression. And we as individuals, I think, have that built into us, the desire to bring forth something from within us and express it. Little children, it's one of the first things they do when they start making things or discovering things is and being able to verbalize it. They will run to somebody and say, look, look what I did, you know, look what I made. And it's kind of connecting to other people, and it's also coming,
lends credence.
Creative act, you know, that just...
It lends credence to the idea that you exist.
Yeah. Well, yes, that's what you're doing. But I think that there's phases of longing and phases of development, as you've talked about.
Right.
The little kid is holding up the thing that, look, Mom, what I did. There's further along the road, there's those looking back and sort of like thinking that's so beautiful, you know, watching the kid. But the kid is totally into it. But there's a certain, this is my, when I think of the greats, the really great artists, the people that have done the most like profound statements and the deepest works, there's this sort of, I very much think of Saint Anne in the painting by Da Vinci, where we've got the mother and the baby Jesus, which represent the whole drama of life. And then we've got John the Baptist, a little pointing at like the ultimate transcendent truth. Then we've got Saint Anne, who is all knowledge, watching the whole thing with this incredible love. She's seen it all, done it all, she knows it all, and yet she's letting it happen and watching. And it's the feeling I have about the greatest of artists and the greatest of men in the world. It's like they just know what it is, and they're sort of allowing it to happen, and then they're making this statement about how beautiful the world is. There's something that happens, I think, as you get along, where, as an artist especially, where you don't want to say it's all just illusion. It's all stupid. It's all, you know, a game of the mind, and it's just, you love it more and more at every stage, and you get to this point where your artwork is just like cherishing it all. It's like you're buying back into the longing for it's the beauty of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it ironic that love, the depth of the love, is somehow proportional to the degree of the non-involvement?
Yeah.
the more non-involved you are, the more you can love it.
Yeah, because that's the only real full integration.
Yeah.
Which the longing has at its basis. It is this longing for integration of all of the opposites of life, and the more that's capable of happening, the more you can enjoy all the opposites of life.
And you're in the best place to make a statement about it.
Yeah, and conversely, the closer you get to the basis of it all, the more even the things that used to make sense become themselves opposites of each other. And everything turns into a paradox. The deeper your understanding of how it works, the deeper your realization that it couldn't possibly work.
which takes us back into where we get, well, I don't know where we started talking about anything, but the mystery, the mystery of the whole thing becomes just like mind-boggling.
Well, and I think that's part of that this longing we've been talking about too in every human is there's some, to some degree, depends on the individual, but to some degree there is a longing to plunge into that mystery, no holds barred, no matter what. And for some people, that longing to plunge into the mystery can be just a kind of quick little temporary thing, and then, oh my gosh, it's too scary, and the door is closed to that. And other people open that door wide and just spend the rest of their lives going full bore into this yeah. mystery.
Falling.
The free fall that yeah. we were talking about with Richard.
Spend the rest of your life in free fall. And yet you can still turn your head as you fall.
Well, we were talking about that place where there's sort of, you learn how to manage that free yeah. fall. So there's a balance. The paradox is sort of like,
right.
you become a master of the paradox, which is ability to function while in the free fall.
When I was younger in high school and college, I had a strong desire to go skydiving in order to experience the free fall. It wasn't the parachute part that I wanted to do the free fall. But in my mind, I said, I'm only going to do it if I have a written guarantee from God that I'm not going to hurt myself or die in the process, which completely...
Did you get that?
No, of course. And what that indicates is that I really wasn't ready for surrendering to free fall. You know, it was just, exactly. Okay, but I want control. I want my conditions
right, there you met. Go. That's so, the two things right there.
Never did skydive.
But we do have places that we can exercise the practice, and the art is one of those places.
Mm-hmm.
It's a forum for practicing this.
My friend Jeff and I did a series of life drawing classes one time and up in Vermont after college, and one of the things that we did on one occasion, since we had an adventuresome group of students, was we wanted to do it for a week, and they could only put up with it for 2 days, but we assigned, we'd been doing a lot of high-speed drawing, and we assigned a sequence of drawings that we agreed on with the class, and then we'd spend, you know, 5 minutes on one, and then 5 minutes on the next, and 5 minutes on the next, and after we had a dozen drawings, we destroyed them all, and then we did it again. And we did that all day for 2 days. And it was amazing. You know, the people who swore that they weren't attached to their stuff, and, you know, they could take it or leave it, and they just saw it all as a learning experience. Every now and then they'd come up with something that was really nice, and boy, then it was not a learning experience to destroy it. It was way more important than anything they might learn. And, you know, on one hand, it's just a cheap psychology stunt, but on the other hand, it's the nature of getting through the veil.
Probably the key point.
Mm-hmm.
That we should raise it with the art world and the purpose of making art.
Yeah.
Because there's all this hoo-ha of value on these things that these people are making. They're just innocent expressions, and the expressions should be heartfelt statements without attachment of declaring my love, and then immediately it tightens up in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with talking about letting go and about the process. There's whole schools of process art,
yeah.
And yet those processes are constantly being packaged and sold, and reputations are built
yeah.
around these so-called processes that you're going through.
Well, I thought it was interesting, what Richard brought up about, being painting being particularly appropriate for this kind of experience. And I guess, you know, you can differentiate the arts to some extent by saying that some of them are more unidirectional than others. You know, you can write and revise and revise and revise for 25 years and never finish the same work. But in varying ways, I think most art forms still have that quality. Even a performing art, you know, you're playing and you just hit a note and you didn't hit it the way you planned on hitting it, and in your mind, this beautiful process that you've been in the middle of has just been changed by the nature of that note. It's the same on stage, you know, your personality is leaking into the character too much and you're performing something you hadn't planned on. And it's too late, it's gone. It's on the canvas of time now and you can't erase it, you can't paint over it, except in the sense that you can make the audience forget that it happened. And so, you know, maybe it might be interesting in another program to explore where that mechanism lies in all the different kinds of art and in living itself. You're walking down the street thinking thoughts and you have some thought that raises waves of anxiety in your stomach and you're thinking, oh boy, I'm not going to enjoy the rest of today. And then, you know, you can live in that world for a while or not.
I think probably each art form, we're probably not talking so much about painting as the one place that this can happen.
Right.
Because I know as a fact, with my knowledge of painting, that there's two angles on painting.
Mm-hmm.
And he was describing the romantic process.
Yeah.
And I think we can find the romantic process in every art form where you're on the line.
Yeah.
Like with improvisational music, anything where you're having to perform, having to deliver. And in painting, we've got the classical and the romantic. And the classical, you know, it's like building a house.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.